It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona at the farm. Now, we have, in the last hour, we had on Angela Keaton from antiwar.com giving her perspective on the anti-war movement, where we're going, where she's marketing, how she's having an impact, and a speech that she gave in New Hampshire, along with our next guest, Dr. John Walsh. Now, let me introduce Dr. Walsh. He's a professor of microbiology and physiological systems at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He's a graduate of Harvard Medical School, so the boy's got skills. Now, the thing is that I want to make sure that you understand, John, what we're focusing on here. Angela gave a speech where she started off saying that libertarians need to check their libertarianism at the door, and we need to focus on this anti-war thing, and all that other stuff will just, you know, work itself out after we stop killing people en masse. So I'm going, you know, from someone from the left, and you know, talking to you, reading your bio, understanding where you've come from, that you certainly approach politics from what most would consider a left perspective. Government has a role in whatever it is that you believe, and we may get into that. But my point is that can the left do the same thing? You know, can they set aside all the things that they wanted to do with the money savings from the empire bringing its tentacles back home, and then Lord knows what's going to happen then. But I mean, the first thing is stop killing people. So Dr. Walsh, you know, help me out, you know, go ahead, and I want you to address that right off the top. Can the left focus along with the rest of us, as you refer to them, paleoconservatives, the people that were more back in the olden days, kind of, man, we were anti-war and this neoconservative thing. I don't know where the heck that came from. But the whole thing is that we have been a long time against war, the libertarians, a lot of conservatives. And now we want to wrap arms and legs around our newfound anti-war left buddies. Is that possible? And give me your opinion.
Well, first of all, it's really nice to be here. And it made me think your opening of No Fear. That is so important. And I think in our daily lives, we forget that a lot, that you can't, anybody who acts out of fear unnecessarily, or even unless your back is to the wall, such a person is going to end up not doing the right thing. So I think that's a wonderful thing to emphasize. So to answer your question, I wouldn't quite agree with Angela that we have to leave everything else at the door. I don't want people who have other beliefs on the right, who are anti-war and who work together with the left, to be quiet about those other beliefs. I think you know, people should speak up and say what they believe in. I just don't think that those other beliefs on right or left, as much as we speak about them, should stand in the way of making common cause for something we both believe in. That's just stupid. I mean, the more I think about it, the harder it is for me to understand that. If you have something that you want that you can get by getting together with other people with whom you have some disagreements, then why would you not do that? I mean, we're getting to the point where we're dealing more with theology than politics, and I really don't understand it. So that's number one. People shouldn't, and as a matter of fact, I think both sides will learn something. As a matter of fact, since I've been working with people on the libertarian side of things, which is, 2005, I've learned a hell of a lot. And I think others could, too. I think people should be open-minded. So that said, I think, yes, you're right, that the left is going to have a tremendous difficulty and is having a tremendous difficulty with this whole idea of the right-left coalition. Now, not every lefty is having a problem with it, but I think I'm looking here at I have on my computer screen today's issue of Counterpunch, which is a left-wing, counterpunch.com, a left-wing website, which is anti-war and has also pushed for the idea of a right-left alliance. At least its editor has. But I'm looking through this here, and today there's I'm viewing this now from a very practical point of view. I'm viewing this from the point of view of the only anti-war candidate we have around, and that's Ron Paul. There isn't anybody else. He is it. There's nobody on the Democratic side. There's only one on the Democratic side. He's sure not against war. Romney and the ex-ambassador to China and Bachman, and to me, they're clones. They're clones of Obama, too. I don't really see on this issue, and frankly on other issues either, any big difference. So here's Ralph Nader writing this piece. And what's he say? He says, President Obama should realize that his back-of-the-hand attitude to his liberal and progressive supporters who sent him to the White House can have consequences. He believes they have nowhere to go, but they do. They can stay home in 2012, as many did in 2010, to the detriment of the Democrats and many congressional races. Well, is that the best that he can suggest that we do in 2012 is stay home? There's another article here by David Lindorf, blowing it, how the Democrats are sinking themselves. Same thing. Stay home. Another one by V.J. Prashad, who, like Nader, I respect greatly. And what does he say? He says, we've got to forget about electoral politics for now. Stay home. Well, and I've been involved in a discussion with the last of these, V.J., and he has been unable to argue successfully why we shouldn't back Ron Paul. So I think there is a real problem here. I'm sure there's a problem on both sides, but the problem, I think, is looking the left right in the eye because of this upcoming election. And in New Hampshire especially, where I think Ron Paul needs to make a breakthrough, we have to bring some independents and some people who normally vote Democrat into the primary on the Republican side if Paul is to make some breakthroughs. So, yes, I think the left has tremendous problems. It's not going to be easy. And
let me go ahead and make my point this way, and maybe you can tell me whether this rings true or not, is that when there is some opportunity for us to stop the war, usually it comes in the form of some type of legislation such as, you know, defunding it. That usually is how this winds up happening.
Yes.
When that does, they'll go, okay, well, to get the coalition together in the left end, kind of, all right, we're going to take this savings and a significant portion of that savings, 33.3%, goes to fill in the blank progressive cause because it's the only way you're going to get our vote and support of blah, 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 blah. That's where the politics starts coming in. And that's, you know, kind of the point that I'm wondering how it is that we're going to be in a situation when that happens. Can you get the, you know, the paleoconservatives and the libertarians in support of something like that? And will the coalition break down? And I'm hoping that, you know, people in the position, influential position such as you, Dr. Walsh, you can go, look, keep all that stuff out to the side because we're focusing on stopping the war first. Well, we'll talk about more here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and Dr. John Walsh when we come back in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story, same old
song and dance. Yeah, it's the same. Same. We go through this over and over and over and over. That's why they call it revolution, man. It just keeps coming round and round. And I need to know where we're going to have the coalition that is going to hold. Because what we've had in the past has always been people that have benefited from each other's databases, each other's emails, having the opportunity. Yeah, you're breathing into the receiver, man. What we want to do is to make sure that we have a coalition that would last on something that is worthy of lasting. Stop killing people. Well, that is, I would hope, the motivation behind anti-war. But I got to ask you, Dr. Walsh, you know, what is your motivation? I mean, it's morality directed at what? You know, we're killing people, we're wasting money, we better to use that money for something else. I mean, what is your motivations behind being anti-war?
Well, my motivation actually is I find the whole thing morally repugnant. That's my motivation. I'm not into stopping war to, frankly, to make more jobs, although that would be good, to lower taxes, although that would be good. No, I'm in it to, I'm frankly in it because like you said, I don't like to see people being killed. And as Ron Paul often points out, it's very hard to find in all of history a good reason for even one of them. So one of them, meaning one of the wars. So that's where I come from. But other people come from different perspectives. Others think, I don't want to pay for it. It's my taxes. I don't. That's fine with me. Other people believe that God doesn't want us to wage war. That's fine with me too. It's all fine. Frankly, I think, you know, there's so many different reasons why people say they're against it. That, and I think my favorite reason for thinking the real reason, is that deep inside, I think there is a real moral revulsion in not all, but most all people. So, but I don't care. And, you know, you were talking before about where we would end up if on the day after we had voted to stop funding the war, where would those monies go? Well, I think if they were used to decrease our taxes, if they were used to for some social programs, I personally don't care. I have preferences, but I'll give up the preferences to stop this thing. And frankly, I think you have to say to people, well, geez, you mean, now I'm just going to speak how I would speak to the left here. You mean if it meant that we were to stop the war and you didn't get any of your social programs and all you got was a decrease in your taxes and the taxes of your friends, then you would not be for that? You would not join such a coalition? That doesn't seem to me very reasonable. It, as a matter of fact, again, it seems a little crazy. And I think that is a question that has to be solved afterwards. And I think everybody has to say, you know, the worst thing we could do is to spend the money the way we're spending it now, because not only are we killing people, but we're setting the stage for bigger and bigger massacres, bigger and bigger wars. We can't afford in the age of advanced technology, and I don't just mean nuclear weapons. Who knows what else we'll come up with? Laser weapons? Who knows? To be in states of war. We don't know where that will take us. It is entirely possible we could wipe out the human race and much of life on the planet if we just keep going this way. So we have to stop. We have to realize we're on a very bad road here, and we're in the driver's seat. The United States is in the driver's seat now. We can change the course of history here. But so far, I'm afraid we're not living up to the task very well.
You know, I wanted to ask from your perspective, who are we up against? I need to get a bead on what the opposition actually is, because, you know, I've seen how the anti-war movement that was, you know, had a lot of left influences in there, how, you know, different organizations used that to further
their agenda.
And I can see as the anti-war movement would, you know, rise up again without this collective centralized force. I think hopefully from the internet and so on and the experience, people have learned their lesson. Now we're not going to get involved in, you know, vote for somebody or something, or even Dr. Paul. It's advocating the message. It's advocating what he's saying. It's, you know, show me what you're going, my congressman is going to vote for to end this thing or stop the funding. Or, I mean, I can see that they always want to make it a collective. It's a national thing. That's how Obama got elected. And then he keeps waging, we're in what, 3-4 more countries since then? So I'm just going, there has to be some kind of a focus that is more of a cultural aspect to not just the American people, but humanity in general. And if you were to coalesce that concept, it's something that we should teach generation next, our children, as they grow up. What's the one thing that you think it would be to where just war in and of itself would just be abhorrent to them? What's the one thing we're missing in kindergarten? What would you advocate we teach our children, generation next?
Well, I don't know. That's a really big question, but I do know.
It's the most important question.
I know. I don't have an answer for it. But what I do know is that there are principles right now that can deter us from getting involved in these wars. One principle is, again, I'm not here to campaign for Ron Paul, okay? I like him an awful lot, but again, what he and the libertarians emphasize is that Congress has to vote for these things. If we don't have a congressional vote, then how can we have a discussion? The discussion has to be before Congress. That's how these things have to be discussed. That's
not according
principle.
To Obama, man. He just goes.
I know. He doesn't even he doesn't even bother to stop to lie to us like Bush did. He just goes. And that's another problem. You cannot let these people do this and get away with it. There should be a very strong impeach Obama message in this country. And if that's too offensive to some people, if you want to say impeach Obama, indict Bush because they both done it, that's fine with me too. But right now, given what's going on, and of course Libya is the worst example of the whole thing. He didn't even pretend that it was necessary, and he's getting away with it. And frankly, if some people were willing to impeach him just because they're Republicans who don't like Democrats, that's fine with me too, because we've got to stop one of these guys. We've got to impeach one of them. So from that point on, they'll say, oh, I better watch out before I do something like this. Look what happened to Barack. He got impeached, and he's in jail. You know, you only need, if you do that once, I think it's a mighty big lesson. And so I think that principle of the double principle of, oh, that's the other thing, non-intervention. A lot of the left doesn't get that there is this impulse, and Justin Raimondo talks about this a lot, to do good in the world. Well, you know, a physician says, first do no harm. Let's make sure we're not doing any harm before we talk about doing good. And let's not try to bomb people into a better life.
You can't bomb them into a better life. That's a good way of putting it. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Dr. John Walsh here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit. You stay right there. Welcome back to Declare Fear Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. On the line with us, we have Dr. John Walsh from Massachusetts, and I'm just wanting to make sure that we emphasize how important this project is, because I don't remember I'm sure in history there might be. I'm not aware of any time that there has ever been such a wide voluntary association in a book. I'm holding it up for the camera here. All right, take a look at this. Okay, comehomeamerica.us. And this has been a compilation of a lot of articles by individuals making the case in several categories, you know, and some people have contributed more than once, but it basically is, you know, the case against war. And it's amazing to me that you got to make a case against war as detailed as this. And really what it does is it shows how many people from how many wide perspectives are against war. Well, who's for it? And why are they for it? Where's the book for this? And I'll tell you, Doctor, I remember in the early stages of this where I first saw the first book in a case for war. And it came from the Just War Doctrine. And it was a book that was distributed throughout all the churches. Now, Charles Goyette, as he was doing his radio show and I was producing for him, we were on the Air America affiliate here. And we took the time and went to a friend of mine that was a Bible study leader in a local church that he was conducting these actual classes. They had the book. It was a, I think it was something, it was like a 12-week program. I mean, it was amazing how long this was, that they were walking through using Christian doctrine. You weren't even supposed to, it was very important, you're not allowed to ask questions until the end of the study. So what they did, they were indoctrinating an entire generation of people of faith into why it's so important that we go kill Muslims. And I'm just, we sat there and listened to this and just couldn't believe it. There was actually the only time I've seen any kind of publication, even a curriculum to people that are supposed to be of peace, of, you know, being good Christians, of the argument for war. Now, other than that, are you aware of any other indoctrination, certainly in printed form, that is advocating war? I'm not. Are you?
Well, I grew up as a very, very serious Catholic. I nearly became a Jesuit priest, and I'm not a Catholic anymore. But I remember being taught about just war, and the arguments were always very convoluted. And I even remember, because I'm old enough to have been involved in this, I remember having religious leaders tell me it was my duty to go and fight in Vietnam. I could never understand how that was a just war. I'm not a pacifist. I do think there are times when people have to defend themselves. I mean, you know, for example, if somebody invaded our country and was going to threaten my home and my family and my loved ones, I do have the right, and we have the right under international law to defend ourselves. But for me, that's about, well, and also we have the right to have revolutions and throw off oppressors if that's the only way out. Those two things, yes, but to attack another country when we haven't been attacked, I'm afraid not, and it always ends up badly. So there are people, you know, there have always been people who made money on war. You know, since the ancient Greeks, there were Athenians making a bundle off war and selling things to armies when they needed them, and that we have the military-industrial complex today. But, you know, Walter Jones, if I have his name right, lives Walter Jones is a congressman. His congressional district, I believe, has the highest level of military spending in the United States. And yet, he's very solidly against war now. So even if you have the military-industrial complex, that's not omnipotent. That's not all-decisive. You can have a very powerful military-industrial complex and yet have people and representatives against war. We have that in Massachusetts. We have a lot of defense spending here, but we have a population that's pretty anti-war. unfortunately, when it comes to giving General Electric an extra contract, you know, people have second thoughts. But in general, I think that the military-industrial complex might not be the power that we think it is. It might be a paper tiger, maybe not so strong as we think. And also, I'm very struck by, again, that in terms of getting contributions from military personnel, I believe Ron Paul gets by far and away the most. So certainly the grunts, I don't know where the brass seem to be willing to go to war if they have to advance their careers. But the grunts clearly don't like it because they're making contributions to Ron Paul.
Well, all these points that you bring up just kind of, you know, really begs the question that I keep having. Who are we up against? You make a good point. You know, people even in strong defense spending districts are against war at a visceral level. You have Generation Next. You would think a lot of them are against it. The troops that go over and experience it and come back, a lot of them are very vocal against it. You have the actual money that they're spending towards a message of peace. They're putting their money where their mouth is. We have, I mean, every piece of evidence would show that the American people are kind of, even in the polling and so on. So I'm just, and no matter how much Fox News and even CNN and MSNBC, these guys are all for, but it's just under their certain condition or criteria, you're not doing it right, you know? And I have to ask, what do you think we're up? Because first thing you go, first, you have to change the culture. First, you have to change the mind of the people. First, you have to do things like comehomeamerica.us and say, look, here's a good argument. You need water cooler ammunition. You know, it'll be against, well, here's some material for you. But you get to that point, and then you're going, okay, and we still have it. They're still passing this. They're still extending the debt limit. They're still, you know, enabling this. They're still having the Federal Reserve print more money. They're still buying the debt. They're still to wage more war and killing people. What are we up against? Something is stopping the will of the people in this democracy or the republic or whatever you want to call it. You know what it is? It's not ours. It's not us. It's not representative of the people. It's something else. And I need from your perspective, what the heck is it that we're up against, that we're fighting this against?
Well, I can think of, I mean, if you want, first of all, it is the military-industrial complex. There's a lot of money to be made, and, you know, we spend, what is it, we spend it on the whole national security complex, probably $1.2 trillion a year. Our GDP is $15 trillion, so 1.3 out of 15 is a handsome piece of a pretty big gross domestic product. So that's a big financial interest. I think also there are people who, at the top of the pyramid here in the Imperial City, they're so important. They're lords of the world. You know, there's that power is very attractive to some people. Without that, you know, Washington's not such a hotshot place. There are foreign powers that can manipulate us. And this has happened in the past. Any empire can be manipulated by a junior power. It happened in the 50s when we got involved in the Korean War because of the so-called China lobby on Taiwan that had lost the Revolutionary War there. They manipulated us. They were behind a lot of... and even the Vatican then was very gung-ho for the United States to fight communism all over the world. We should have never been involved in that. There's Israel plays the same role now. Israel has tremendous clout and wants us to be on a war footing. And the neocons, who are, you know, very pro-Israel by and large, were a major factor in getting us into Iraq. They're a major factor in getting us into Libya. If they have their way, they're going to get us into Iran,
too. If they have their way, we're going to Iran. We'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Dr. John Walsh, one of the authors of comehomeamerica.us. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
We gotta fight the powers that be. Got so many voices. Sit on the scene. Give
stirring up all around me.
Yeah, we got to fight the powers that be. Let me tell you, what's the powers that be? We got to find out. And it's one thing I want to, you know, as we're fighting them, there's going to be, there's always schisms. I mean, because that's just the way human beings are. But I'm telling you, when you have something as important as an anti-war effort to stop the mass killing of people, and you can get people to come together and say, you know what, I put my name on the list. Here's an article. Here's two. Here's three. You know, how much I say we should be against killing, you would think that that would bring people together and the focus of that effort. But I have to ask Dr. Walsh the question, you know, how's the coalition that was brought together under comehomeamerica.us, you know, how's this doing? Is the coalition, or is it building? Is it there's schisms? Is there focus by some people to try and use it to do something else? You know, give me, you know, how this came together and how it's progressed and where we're at now with this effort.
Well, I think for one thing, we started out, we had sort of a strategy here. First of all, was to have the conference, which took place in February 2010, about 40 people in Washington, D.C. From that, we produced a book which says that, you know, we can do something serious, and at least, you know, it's a book, it's something out there, and it's real. Then the third thing we've done is we've sent out a letter mentioning impeachment of Obama, not calling for it, but mentioning it, as that Libyan war is an impeachable offense, and calling and it calls on the president and the Congress to stop the wars. And we left all other issues out. And we looked for signatures, and we, you know, we were very impressed by the number of people from right and left who signed on to it. And there were people like very liberal Cornel West, who was very enthusiastic about Obama. He signed on. People, we found more and more people, retired ambassadors, retired military people. We started out with a couple hundred. Anybody now can sign up on the website. Just more and more people came in, and I was encouraged that a substantial number of people who had a diehard left agenda were willing to come in also. So I thought that was great. Not the doctrinaire left, not the rigid... they think of themselves as Marxists. I don't know what they are. Of course, they didn't sign on, but we've had a very broad spectrum of people signing on. And I think also we've stuck to our agenda. We haven't wandered off into anything else. And the next thing, we'd like to have a very large conference of about, you know, hundreds of people within the next half year. Of course, that requires raising money and so on and so forth. Now, what impact will we have? What can we do next? Where will we go with this? It's a work in progress. And I think one thing we have to do is somehow come up with a strategy to show that we can have some impact and some effect. And I think, frankly, I hate to say this, but let's be honest, I don't think we've come up with that yet. I think it's a work in process, and I think... a lot of it is experimental. We'll either hit upon it or we won't.
Well,
but we're trying.
What has been the people that have been involved in this thing? What has been their desire? I mean, has there someone risen up, one of the originals, saying, you know, we need to use this to fill in the blank? Or are they trying to stay on message? Are they anti-war? Are they trying to bring in other stuff? Are there schism people say, I break with thee, I'm going over here and doing whatever? I mean, what's going on inside?
No. I think you know, some of us would like to have the whole organization involved in the Ron Paul campaign, but there are obviously, at this point, difficulties with that. I wish there weren't. But there are tax difficulties. There are a lot of problems. So right now, that is does not appear to be where we're headed. But so what will we do? What will we do next? And I cannot say after the major conference what we will do. We are looking for ideas. But on the key question, I think, of whether or not people are willing to stick to this as opposed to wandering off into other areas, whether they're willing, even though we may occasionally discuss some political philosophy where we differ. By and large, we don't do that. And by and large, you know, I think there's a lot of respect. You know, there's a book, The Road to Serfdom by Hayek, and which is a sort of a classic statement of a free society with the free market. And it's interesting, if you read that, Hayek in the introduction says, you know, I'm addressing this to my friends who are socialists. I'm not going to fight with you. I just like to lay my arguments out here. And I think in that atmosphere, then a lot of respect develops and a lot of commonality. And I think we have that going. Now, is that enough? Who knows? I mean, it's not all, you know, sweetness and light, but by and large, it has been. So I'm encouraged, but I don't know exactly whether we'll try to take up some electoral programs, try to get some people elected. And we're not in this for the short term either, because it isn't just the wars that are going on now. What I'm very concerned about is that we are on a collision course with, if we could be on a collision course with China. We don't want to do that. We don't want to repeat the Cold War all over again. It's just...
Oh, some people want to.
Some people want to, but I don't think we can afford to. So there again, by the way, the libertarian philosophy is great. Is that, you know, if goods cross borders, armies won't. That's great. That side of things is, you know, if people want to compete economically, cooperate economically, that's all to the good. I'm very worried, and we're very worried about the long-term prospects of some, you know, we escaped the Cold War with the Soviet Union. We all came out of it alive, thank goodness. Let's not keep experimenting.
You know, the one thing, and this brings up a good point, you'll have a lot of the libertarians that are listening. I know what they're just saying, come on, Ernie, say it, man, say it.
Go ahead.
And it'll come out like this. When you have goods crossing borders and so on, there is an atmosphere that allows that to be done in a peaceful way. It's fair. It's equitable. It's individual to individual, the proper role of government defending the property rights of individuals, yada, 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 yada. And you would have, from the left, oftentimes they'll want, well, it needs to benefit one group over another. It needs to be where, you know, even on a local level, on a city level, you'll have, well, the sidewalk concrete contract has to go to a business owned by a minority, a gay or a woman. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. And you'll have all of these kinds of managing of the commerce that they want in such a way for some kind of social justice. Or it'll be, so that's when you start getting into where the libertarians are going, whoa, 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 man. We want to maintain the peace. We want to have to where we're integrated in such a way that we're not having war with these people. We're doing trades and so on, but we don't want to have war amongst ourselves. This is where the libertarian philosophy always raises itself up in the rhetoric, when you have, like you're saying, the libertarian philosophy of maintaining a peaceful relationship with another country. There's a base philosophy that goes deep behind that we have to educate. Here, yeah, I just spilled my stuff all over. Yeah, we have to educate people into understanding what that is. And you're right. We are consistent. We are, you know, very much in this for the long haul. And we do understand what is, hopefully would bring this entire culture and atmosphere around. But I just, it's hard for me to, as you would disagree a little bit with Angela, that you don't have to check all your philosophy at the door. But I can see to where we're going to be much more influential to the left and the right with libertarian rhetoric, because, of course, we believe it and believe it to be true and it works. Freedom always works, you know, and I'm going, I don't know how susceptible you're going to be to that or how welcoming you are when it starts to penetrate and influence generation next in comparison. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, that's all okay with me because I'm always for, I don't know. I think that on these issues we may stumble a lot, but we'll work our way forward. And I'm fine. I would rather have if I had to disagree with anybody and say I want somebody in charge that I disagree with, I would prefer it to be a libertarian, because then I know that I'm not going to be locked up in a torture chamber or have my freedom of speech shut down. I can't be sure of that with the crowd that's in there now. As a matter of fact, in the long run, I'm pretty sure I won't have that. So I wanted to say one thing before we go.
Sure.
Because I think that, and that is, you know, I don't know, you can talk about the, people talk about the Chinese are always saying, you know, socialism, whatever they mean by that, because I'm not too sure, with Chinese characteristics. Well, whatever society you're looking forward to, it's going to have distinct characteristics of your culture and your own society that reflects its history. And our future society, whatever it is going to be imbued with libertarian characteristics, because that's our history. That is the way people speak in this society. And so that's what we're going to have. And if people can't adjust themselves to that, then they're going to be on the losing side. And I think when you look at the anti-war movement, since that is the way people speak and think, in large part, then I believe that the libertarian right and the paleoconservative right too have the key, have the words, have the concepts to reach the American people on opposition to war, which I'm afraid the left does not have. So I agree with this fellow George O'Neill, who's one of the people who provided a lot of support in the beginning for Come Home America, that the key, the road, the main road to this is through the libertarian and the right. So you guys have a lot to say about what's going to happen here.
You know, and one thing, and I appreciate it, appreciate that observation, and you would imagine from our perspective we know that, and it's inevitable. You know, in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first. Well, help us keep the mess at bay and it not hopefully get bloody here at home, Dr. John Walsh. You know, thank you for coming on, Doctor, and it was a great conversation. Hopefully we'll be able to visit with you again in the future.
We'll okay, talk to great you. Program.
Thank you very much. We'll get Bye-bye. This right to you. We'll be right back tomorrow here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We'll talk to you then. Don't stop. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured. Tour.